Now, since we have been having a series of studies on the subject of prayer, and even this morning we considered two men who went up to the temple to pray, I was thinking that perhaps tonight we'll spend some time examining the last day in the life of a man who was a man of prayer. We referred to this man on Friday evening. His name was Elijah. Now, I think we learn concerning that man that not only was he a man of prayer, but he was a righteous man. For you will remember in that little section, it says, "The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much," and it goes on to say, "and Elijah," etc., etc. So Elijah was a man of prayer, but Elijah was a righteous man, or else his prayer would never have been answered. Not only so, but Elijah was a man of faith, or it says the prayer of faith in that same section, before it introduces Elijah. So here was the pattern, as it were, the outstanding example of a man who knew how to pray the prayer of faith. He prayed for a sick nation. They were restored. Here was a man who was a righteous man, yet he lived in the midst of an unrighteous people. Here was a man who had faith in his God at a time when his nation had turned away from God and were worshipping idols. And I want this evening to examine the last day of this man's life on earth. Let us turn then to the second book of Kings, chapter 2. And we'll read 11 verses from this chapter. The second book of Kings, chapter 2, verse 1. "And it came to pass, when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. And Elijah said unto Elisha, Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said unto him, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. And the sons of the prophets that were at Bethel came forth to Elisha and said unto him, Knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? He said, Yea, I know it. Hold ye your peace. And Elijah said unto him, Elisha, Tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Jericho. And he said, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they came to Jericho. And the sons of the prophets that were at Jericho came to Elisha and said unto him, Knowest thou that the Lord will take away thy master from thy head today? And he answered, Yea, I know it. Hold ye your peace. And Elijah said unto him, Tarry, I pray thee, here, for the Lord hath sent me to Jordan. And he said, As the Lord liveth, that thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And they too went on. And 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood to view afar off. They too stood by Jordan. And Elijah took his mantle, wrapped it together, and smote the waters. They were divided hither and thither, so that they too went over on dry ground. They came to pass, when they were gone over, that Elijah said unto Elisha, Ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee. Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. He said, thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be so. And it came to pass, as they still went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And the Lord will bless to us the reading of these interesting verses. Let us suppose for a moment that each of us could be informed that we had just another day to be here on this earth. Just suppose that tomorrow was to be our last day. Now, I'm not trying to be sordid. I'm trying to be realistic. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if tomorrow was to be our last day down here and the Lord was going to call us home tomorrow night? I wonder how many of us would say tonight, if we could be informed that tomorrow was to be the last day, even so, come Lord Jesus. Not everybody says that. Sat in a house one night with a dear Christian gentleman. We were discussing the truth concerning the coming of the Lord. And he had a nephew sitting in the house who was in the British Air Force. The Royal Air Force. He broke into the conversation. He said, I'm just as well tell you. He says, I don't want the Lord to come just now. I looked at him and said, why not? Because, he says, there are things I would like to do, places I would like to go, things I would like to see for the Lord come. A year later, I was in that same home talking to the same gentleman. I said, by the way, what about that nephew of yours? He says, which one? I said, the one who was stationed here in this area and was in your home the last time I was here. I said, he was in the Royal Air Force. Oh, him. He said, he's just turned out a bad young fellow. I said, what? Oh, yes. He says he's broke his parents' heart. He says he's not interested the least in spiritual things. Well, I said, I'm not surprised. He says, why? He says, that man didn't want the Lord to come. Search your heart tonight, beloved. If we're not anxious for the return of the Lord, there's something wrong somewhere. Suppose we could be informed that tomorrow was to be our last day down here. How would we spend tomorrow? Now, how would you? Well, Elijah was a man who knew that his last day had come. A man who was a man of God. A man who had passed through a variety of circumstances. A man who had stood the test of trial. Above and beyond that, he was a man of prayer. A man who knew how to pray for his nation. A man who knew how to present the case before God in faith. Now he's come to his last day on earth. Because it's obvious from the reading of this passage, he knew it. See? Came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha and so on, and they said to Elijah, do you know your master's going to be taken from you today? He said, yes, I know that. Well, how did he know it if he wasn't told? How did the sons of the prophets know it if they hadn't been told? Elijah knew here was something that must have been revealed to him. His last day had come, and he was going to heaven without dying. What a wonderful prospect. Well, how did Elijah spend that day? I want you to notice that he spent it having a walk. You might want to call it a journey, because it was quite a journey. He went around in circuit, as it were, visiting certain places. And he had with him a young man who had been his servant, a young man who in his early days had worked on the farm, a young farmer, who used to plow with his oxen, not with a tractor, but with the oxen. And one day he gave up the plowing in order to follow the man of God. And so from that point on, he had been the servant to this great man, Elijah. And on the last day of Elijah's life down here, he went for a walk with the young man who was his understudy. May I suggest he did this because he had certain things to tell the young man, certain things to pass on to him, certain instructions that he wanted to give to that young man. It's quite a customary thing yet, isn't it? If some elderly person is lying in bed and the doctor has said, well, you know, John, you haven't long now. I think you better call the family. And he gets his family around his bed and he's got something to say to them. Nothing new about that. You find it away back in the book of Genesis. When old Jacob was dying, his 12 sons were called in. And one after the other, they stood in front of their father's bed, and he had something to say to each of them. I suggest that right here, Elijah knows he's just got another day, and he's going to pack in as much as he possibly can into that last day. He's going to work to the last hour. In so doing, he goes for a walk with Elisha. Now, if you look at your Bibles again, I'll point out some things to you you might find interesting about those two. Things that sort of brought them together. You know, today we're hearing an awful lot about this generation gap. The generation gap. Now, I'll tell you something, I've never found that gap yet. It's a kind of mystical thing to me, a kind of mythical thing. Something that somebody has thought out as an excuse. But they call it the generation gap. Well, there was no generation gap between Elijah and Elisha. Look, and I'll show you why. Verse 1. The closing statement of verse 1, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. He went with them. There was a mark of unity. An older man walking, as it were, side by side with a younger man. And the younger man willing to go and walk with this older man. That's how it should be. There should be no such thing as this gap between ages and gap between generations. It doesn't work that way. For the simple reason, right here in this country today, we're people of all ages. Some well up in their 90s. Some perhaps who are only born today. And you'll find there's people whose ages differ perhaps just by hours and hours, right down from the oldest to the youngest. So why talk of a generation gap? No such thing. We've all ages. And no one could possibly draw the line and say, there's where it divides, the over 30s and the under 30s and so on. Doesn't work that way. Some are under 30 today, they'll be over 30 tomorrow. The birthday. Here's the whole thing in the Word of God. When it comes particularly to that which savors of Christianity, when you get a Christian community, they're one. Not only was there the mark of unity, look at the end of verse 2 for a moment and watch this expression. So they went down to Bethel. Going down, may I suggest, a mark of humility. It's not an easy thing to go down, is it? Everybody wants to climb up. Two words you'll see wherever you go in this country. Push and pull. Come to your door, you either push it or pull it. And everybody's pushing and pulling no matter where you go. And all for their own end. You remember the first thing the Lord said to Zacchaeus down there at Jericho? He said, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down. He'd been climbing up. You remember what the Lord did that night in the upper room? He rose from the table, laid aside his outer garment, put the towel round here, girded himself with the towel, and went down and washed their feet. It's not an easy thing, is it? May I suggest that these two men, Elijah and Elisha, were marked by unity. They went with one another. They were marked by humility. They went down. But look at the end of verse 4. The words of Elisha to his master. I will not leave thee. So they came to Jericho. I will not leave thee. There was a mark of fidelity. Plain words saying, Elijah, I've been with you now since that day that you threw your mantle over me when I was busy with the oxen plowing. And I left everything to follow you, and I'm not going to give it up now. Even if it's your last day, I'll stay with you to the bitter end. I'll stay with you to the last moment. Here is a mark of fidelity. Look at the end of verse 6 for another statement. And they too went on. In going on, may I suggest that there is a sign of continuity. There's no break in this journey. There was a mark of unity, they're going together. The mark of humility, they're going down. The mark of fidelity, the younger man says, I will never leave you. There's a mark of continuity, and they too went on. But then look at the end of verse 8. Another interesting statement. So that they too went over on dry ground. There was the sign of victory. We'll come to that perhaps later on in our study. But look at the end of verse 11. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Here was Elijah arriving in glory, the end of a perfect day. Let's go back over again. And we'll watch this time the places that they visited. Now I learn in reading these verses, as they went on, they talked. Now how can two walk together except they be agreed? It must be awful for two people to go walking together without talking. Something wrong. If two people are out for a walk, they'll have something to say to one another. Now, I don't know how young people do now. I'm a little bit out of date with some of the ideas, what they do, but I know when I was a young fellow and you started courting, you went walking. It was a good thing. You took your girlfriend for a walk. I suppose that was less expensive then than what they do now. But unless Dad gives the car, I don't know, but we went walking. And usually, when a young couple went walking, they were usually talking. They had things to talk about. So that when you're walking and talking, it must be a very interesting walk. Now watch where they walked and they were talking. And I've asked myself this question once or twice in reading through this passage here, I wonder, what did they talk about? Suppose it had been all written down for us here, everything they said, suppose it had been recorded. It certainly would have made a very interesting conversation. But I'm going to suggest to you that while we do not have the record of what they said, if we watch the places they went to, we might be able to arrive at some conclusion as to what they talked about. For example, the first place it's mentioned here is Gilgal, verse 1. Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal, so there's where they started. Now you see, what lesson can we learn from that? I wonder what they talked about when they were at Gilgal. Here's Elijah, the older man. Here's Elisha, the younger man. Elijah is about to leave him and go home to glory, and Elisha is to carry on with the work. He's going to take responsibility from that day onward. They're at Gilgal. I'm going to suggest to you that they had a little conference meeting right there at Gilgal. And the man who had been characterized by prayer all his life, this man of God, who knew how to pray, he would tell the younger man right there when they were at Gilgal, he would say, I want you to see something here. I want you to come along and see this heap of stones. Here's a heap of stones built up like a small pyramid. I want to tell you something, Elisha. That heap of stones has a story to tell. Do you realize that when our fathers came over from the other side of Jordan and came into the promised land, this is where they encamped, right here at Gilgal. It was right here at Gilgal that God spoke to them. Do you know that this was the first place where they kept the Passover after coming into the promised land? Do you know that it was right here at Gilgal that they reintroduced the covenant sign of circumcision, which had been forgotten for 40 years in the wilderness, and the reproach of Egypt was rolled away right here at Gilgal. It was here where God gave to them the cordon of the land, the old cordon, and it was here the manna ceased. All the memories that would come back there at Gilgal. And putting all these things together, Elijah would tell Elisha, look, my boy, here is where the nation had to learn their dependence on God. I want you to learn this, that I'm going away and you can no longer depend on me. You'll no longer have Elijah to turn to, but from now on, your dependence will be entirely upon God. Just as our forefathers had to depend on God, you will require to depend on God. Isn't that exactly what you do when you pray? Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. So He would teach them that day, lesson number one at Gilgal, while they were going in unity, you must depend on God. Now he says, I'm going over to Bethel. And he says, as the Lord liveth, as thy soul liveth, I'm going with you. I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. Now when they came to Bethel, I wonder what they spoke about at Bethel. May I suggest he took them along first of all and he showed them a pillar there. A pillar. You see now, Elisha, I want you to remember that pillar was raised up by one of our great forefathers, Jacob. Do you know it was right here that Jacob had his first real dealings with God? Here was the place where God appeared to him when he was running away from home. Right here at Bethel, it was that night he had the vision of that ladder set up. And in the morning he took the stone on which his head had rested, and he erected that pillar and poured his oil on it, and performed that little religious service when he made his vow before God, Bethel. Bethel, the place of the presence of God, the house of God. And Jacob said, I didn't even know that God was in this place. But he might have said to him, but I want to show you something else, Elijah. The very place where God appeared to our father Jacob, this is the same place where the people turned to idolatry. This is the place of infidelity. This was the place where they raised the altar to Baal. This is the place where the golden calf was set up. Not the one in the wilderness. No, no. The one in the land. This is the place where they turned away from the true worship. So I want you to note this, Elisha. You have two things to learn here at Bethel. It's the place that spoke of the presence of God, the place that spoke of the people's infidelity. Learn your lesson, my boy. As you go through life, you'll find the two roads. You'll find that which is well-pleasing to God. You'll find the path of righteousness. Remember what Jacob vowed there at Bethel. And remember what the people have done. You'll either be like Jacob, you'll be alone with God. And you'll be required to walk that lonely road. But remember that the promise of God, I will be with thee. I will keep thee, and I will bring thee again into the land. So you've God's presence and God's promise with you. Or there's the other path, running with the crowd. God's word of condemnation upon you. Just as you've been with me, Elijah, I want you to stand true to the things of God. But they moved on from Bethel. He says, now we're going down to Jericho. I wonder, what did they speak about when they came to Jericho? Oh, I think that should be clear. No doubt he took them away up, first of all, onto the hillside there, just underlying those bleak, rugged hills. And he would say to him, now, Elijah, it was right here where the old city stood. It was right here where they marched round the old walls of the old city of Jericho. It was here that God gave the first great victory in the land when the walls of Jericho went down into the ground. Now, they didn't fall out or in, you know, they went down. Don't believe me. Go and have a look at them. They found them. They're still there. And you can see those walls that went down into the ground. He would show them where the old city stood. And he would remind them of this. That God said that that city was not to be built again. And whoever sought to build it, God would judge them there. And he would judge them right from his firstborn to the last of his family. And God kept his word. There came the day when a man decided to rebuild Jericho. The new city was built. But he started to build and God took away his firstborn. By the time they built the city, the day when a man decided to rebuild Jericho, the new city was built. But he started to build and God took away his firstborn. By the time they built the city, his family was gone. God kept his word. Now I'm suggesting to you that the student Jericho, Elijah would remind young Elisha of the power of God. Just as God's power was manifested with the nation when they came into the land, and they were able without armament to capture that great city. Able to defeat the people who were behind that high wall. God's power was manifested again in the man and in the family of the man who sought to defy God by rebuilding the land. I suggest to you the spoke of these things at Jericho. You know, I'm not surprised, of course, that a man wanted to build Jericho. Jericho, you know, has much in common with the place you're living in now. This is the park of the palm. Jericho is the city of the palm. A lot of palm trees in Jericho. Beautiful place. Orange groves, bananas, grapefruit, dates, you name it, it's there. Thanks to Elisha. We're speaking tonight of Elijah, not Elisha, but there's a little incident in Elisha's life, you know, when he came back over to the city of Jericho, they found the water there somehow or other was poisoned. Elisha was the man who, under the power of God, performed the miracle. That water was made pure again, and that water is still there. And Elisha's fountain today is that which provides the water supply for the city of Jericho. They have it running down there in the duct to irrigate all round about where they grow the fruit in abundance. And I suppose the rich people of that day used to go down to Jericho and spend their winter vacations. Must have been delightful. It's still got a balmy atmosphere, just like what you have in North Florida. But you see, God was out of it. They never thought of God. Now, I'm suggesting to you that Elijah spoke to Elisha that day and was pressing home upon the heart of the young man there at Jericho. You must learn something of the power of God if you're going to live for God. Now, he said, if you care to stay here, I'm going on, but God has sent me to Jordan. Well, he said, if you're going to Jordan, I'm going too. Well, there was no Allenby Bridge in these days. He came to Jordan, and there was the water of Jordan. And no bridge to go over. Down they got to the river. I wonder what they spoke about at Jordan. May I suggest, as they got down there, almost to the very place where the children of Israel had come over when they were coming into the land. And now here's Elijah and Elisha standing here. First of all, they would talk about the time when God brought the nation into the land to take possession. That would be part of the conversation. But now he takes off his mantle. As he twists up his mantle and he smites the water. Well, the God that separated the waters of Jordan to let the nation in has now separated the waters, and Elijah is going out. And Elisha goes over with them. And so they too went over. Here again he's learning something of the presence of God. The God who lived in the day when Joshua brought the people over is the same God. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He was a God who was alive in Elijah's day. Same God. If he could smite the waters of Jordan and divide them for a nation to get over, he could divide the waters for Elijah to get over. Of course, it's often been said, rightly or wrongly, I don't know, but most preachers say that Jordan speaks of death. I suppose that's because it runs into the Dead Sea. Whether that be true or not, he was a case of a man who had to go over. But as he's going to go over at Jordan, he's going over there in the power of God and into the presence of God. The presence of God was known right there at Jordan. Here's the way of exit as well as the way of entry. And the power of God must be known. And as he divided the waters, as he smote them and God divided the waters, the two of them went over on dry ground. Now remember, there was quite a number of young folks standing up at Jericho, perhaps on the hillside there. And they're looking down and they saw the two of them. They knew who they were, all right. They wondered where they were going. See, they knew that Elijah was going to be taken away that day, but they didn't know how. All they knew was he was going. And they're watching to see what's going to happen, and they can see the two figures going down, getting further away, out there, right in the distance. And they're standing now on the shores of the river. But what they saw was this, that the two of them went over with glorious victory on dry ground. The older man and the younger man, two of them men of God. It was a great victory. Going over on dry ground. I don't know at times when people sit down to think on the end of their days, very strange thing. Went into a hospital one day to visit a man. I was going in about twice a week to see him. He was very sick. I knew it. He knew it. As I was going in, usually there was someone else with him, perhaps his wife or a friend. But one day, his wife was away for lunch. And I was just leaving to come out. I was at the door. He said, "Brother Mac, come here. Just sit down." And he eased himself up on his elbow. He says, "You know what's wrong with me, don't you?" I said, "Yes, I do." Well, he says, "I know it too." He said, "I know what's wrong with me." And he said, "I'm going to be frank with you." He said, "I perhaps have 2 months to go." He said, "I may have three. Between 2 and 3 months, that's about all." He said, "I may go in 2 months. I want to make some arrangements about things." And I'd never had anybody to speak to me like this in my life before. It touched me a little. He said, "When I go," he said, "I want you to take my funeral. And at my funeral, I want you to tell the people that I knew where I was going. I want you to tell the people that I was saved. And I want you to tell them that I knew I was saved and when I got saved." He gave me all the details. I knew him very well. I said, "Well, Frank," I said, "that's very nice of you to ask me to do that, and I'll make the promise, I'll do it." But I came out that room that day with a lump in my throat and a heavy heart. And yet I knew, same as he did, but that now here's a man who knows. He knows he's going. And he knows it won't be long. And he's making some arrangements now. This is what he wants done. You know, most of us are like the ostrich. We bury our head in the sand. And we try to suggest to ourselves, "It's just not going to be me. It's not going to happen to me." But let us face this, men and women. The Lord could come tonight or tomorrow and take us home to the glory all at the same time. Just with trumpet sound. Or it could be that he could just put his finger on you or me and take us as individuals. Some, you see, will have to go by way of the tunnel of death. Others will have to go over the golden bridge, by the rapture. But we're all going. Elijah knew this was his last day. And it came to pass when they were gone over that Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee." What a lovely thought. The older man looks at the younger man. Now he says, "Elijah, it's just about time for me to bid you goodbye. Now, will you make a last request? What would you like me to do for you before we part company? If it's within my power, Elisha, I'll do it." See, here was the man who knew in his lifetime what it meant to ask God. And he knew what God had done for him. Now he's saying to the younger man, "If there's anything I can do for you, ask me now, because after tomorrow, you will have to get direct to God for what you want. In the meantime, if there's anything I can do for you, I'm willing to do it." See, sometimes you and I lean on others. And there comes a time when God takes the props away. And when the last prop is taken away, we find ourselves cast entirely upon God. Now that's not an easy thing. Just you read Isaiah chapter 6 and you'll find the last prop was taken away from Isaiah. What did he do? He lifted his eyes up and he saw the Lord high and lifted up. And some of you, perhaps all of you, most of you, have come to that stage in life, and I've been there too, where you feel that the last prop was taken away. You said, "Well, Lord, it's up to you." you cast yourself on the Lord for support. Elijah is saying to Elisha, now what would you like me to do? I've been doing a lot for you now. Your last request. Elisha said, I pray for one thing. A double portion of thy spirit to be upon me. Now that's not a selfish thing. I want you to watch this very carefully. That was not a selfish request. What did he mean by saying a double portion? Well, who was it that got the double portion? Wasn't it the firstborn? If a father died and left so many sons, the firstborn was given a double portion. Why? Why was the firstborn given a double portion? So that he would have twice as much as the others? Of course not. See, the firstborn would have to step into his father's place and take responsibility for the mother. And he would have to take the responsibility for the other members of the family. So he had his own portion as well as they had their portion, but he got the double portion, and with that double portion, he assumed the responsibility. It wasn't a selfish thing. It was like saying this, I'm willing to take the place of the firstborn, I'm willing to take the responsibility. And so he accepts the double portion and taking the responsibility when Elijah was going. But then see what he says. Thou hast asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee, and if not, it shall not be so. And he watched. And the end came, and the chariot of fire and the horses came and divided them both asunder. And Elijah goes up into glory with a whirlwind. What a glorious end to the life of a man of faith, a man of prayer, caught up without dying, right into the presence of the Lord. And the next time, you know, of course, you remember he was the man who appeared on the Mount of Transfiguration with Moses and the Lord. There when Peter, James, and John looked on in blank amazement, glorified with the Lord, arriving in glory. How would you spend your last day if you knew it was tomorrow? How should we? I've tried to trace through a little of how Elijah spent his last day. There's one little thing I've left out, I know. I'll leave you to study it through. You notice on their journey, they came across little groups of young men. You might call them Bible students, sons of the province. I've often wondered what Elijah said to these young fellows. No doubt he had little meetings with them as he passed on. I suggest he had things to say to them as well. But none of them followed with him. Only Elisha. Went right over Jordan, right to the place where he saw him go up. Beloved, it may be tomorrow we'll get the call, the trumpet shall shrill. And you and I will leave even Park of the Palms. Glorious place to leave from, I admit, but a better place we're going to. If we go up there, am I speaking to someone in here tonight who's not ready to go? Am I speaking to someone tonight in here that doesn't know the Lord? If the call came to you tomorrow, it would be a blow. You don't want to go, you're not ready to go, you don't know the Lord. Why not get to know Him tonight? Shall we pray? Our Father, we thank Thee for another glorious day spent with Thy people. Thank Thee for the time of worship this morning. We thank Thee for the times we've met together for the ministry of the Word. Pray now as we put our heads down the pillow tonight, it will be to rest knowing that perhaps before another daybreak, we'll have the call to come up higher. Oh God, grant that each of us shall be ready for that all necessary preparation has been made.